It's a beautiful day for a podcast, don't you think so, Mr. Joe Raptor? How you doing?
Yeah, I think it's a great day. It's a crazy week. Playing loads of games, making lots of content, pouring myself some tea. Maybe you hear it, maybe not.
Oh, for the listeners. Oh, now I can see it.
Yeah.
Wow. This is like a 4D experience. Wow. This is crazy.
I had to deal with some crazy conspiracy theories.
Ooh.
And I, we will get into that, I think.
Oh, I'm excited.
I ordered some food, so that might get here any moment. So then I will quickly open the door and then come back. How have you been?
That's great. I've been good. You know, once again, this morning, we're going to talk about some like Dragon's Dogma 2 stuff, because of course we can't have anything nice. So at the start of this morning, I woke up to everybody calling for the game to be canceled again, everybody raging about it. So we're going to talk about that. At the same time, we got some potential, like, maybe speculative stuff about AC Red, but that was interesting. We saw Rise of the Hydra, which looks insane. There's been a lot of stuff, so I think there's going to be some good stuff to chat about. And then as for personal things going on, it's been a pretty uneventful week. So just hanging out. Just hanging out.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. Thank you, Mr. Steel Yo Kill, for becoming a member as well over on YouTube. Appreciate you.
You don't want that person in your team.
I'm busy. Party's full. The two elephants in the room, of course, are Dragon's Dogma 2 and Rise of the Ronin. I have not touched Rise. Well, I did touch Rise of the Ronin. I tried it. I've not played fully Rise of the Ronin. I doubt I will finish it. But I've played all of Dragon's Dogma 2. Have you finished Dragon's Dogma 2 or just put in many hours?
I put in 30 hours and I'm just taking my time. That's a game. I heard some people that got it early as well, like some friends that just blazed through the main story. And I don't think that's how you should play this game. I think you actually said that last week to me after the show, like it's better to just take your time. So I kind of did that and I've been having a great time. Like there's one. So you have this sort of starting area, which is your average forest and sort of human area. And then you also have the more deserty beastern territory. And I found a way to reach that very early on. So I was like level 11 or something, or 12. And I got into this more high level zone and then I could not get back. So I had kind of my cool story there. And then at one point, because of course, if you like travel for a long time, you lose your maximum health, like it goes down and down. So you can still use potions or healing, but your maximum health is a little less each time after each battle. So at one point, I only had like, I think, one third of my health, and then I went to a camp fire to rest and get my full health back. But then enemies attacked. I lost my campsite. I was in this high level zone. I was really like, I have to redo my save because I can't get out of this super, against these. I was like one shot. I still figured it out. I got to the beast sort of city and I got to an inn there and could rest. So like stuff like that is just really cool. And you kind of make your own story in the game. And there are totally some issues because of the kind of freedom, but I do think that's kind of worth it for what they are trying to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's really cool. There's a lot of emergent stories and things. The one I shared in the review was when I was riding overnight on an ox cart and I was trying to get, between one big city and another city. And so I was riding it. And normally when you're not jumped by goblins or an ogre or anything, you just ride and it's basically just a load screen. It's an in-game form of fast travel. And But in this case, I got jumped by an ogre and some goblins and stuff. And so we fought him off. But one of my pawns I had recruited with a great sword, he was trying to be helpful and swing at a goblin, but he swung too wide and broke the wagon we were riding on. So I had to run the rest of the way in the middle of the night because he broke the wagon. And it was a cool, like, dynamic thing where it's like, okay, I didn't really think that that could happen, but it sure can. And I had to find and figure out a way around it. And there's a lot of things like that where you kind of have to dig yourself out of those holes that you find yourself in. It's one of those things some people will absolutely hate and find super annoying. Just like with that, some people are going to find you getting, you know, lost or not lost, but kind of stuck in a late game area because you stumbled onto it. Some people would be like, oh, that's terrible. I hate it. In other ways, it's kind of fun. So it just depends on how you interpret it.
Normally I'm not a huge fan, like stuff like the Red Dead Redemption, your horse is dead, now go walk for an hour, like it's stuff like that I don't like. But in this game, I don't know, I think it's very rewarding. Like killing enemies gives you a lot of XP and to rank up your vocation, and there's a lot like of chests, and every gear item doesn't have a level requirement. So if you find something in a late game area, you can immediately use it. So that makes it all very rewarding. So
yeah, they kind of welcome you. They're like, you earned this by getting here. So take it, wear it.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did not really look at the news. I did see the sort of microtransactions they added. I did see someone say that they put it in the review guide that they were going to do it, but it's always like kind of hit or miss for people who don't know. Like, of course, when you, we are of course blessed to get games early so we can make content for everyone before release. And they always send a review guide with some tips and tricks. But every company does it different. Sometimes they say, don't talk about anything past this point. And then you're like, okay, sure. And sometimes they say, don't tell that this character died in this scene. And I'm like, yeah, what the heck? Like,
well, why? You spoiled it.
So it's, I'm always kind of hesitant on checking the review guide, or they also like share the spoiler guide. So I was like, I'm not going to touch that. And they put in, in that guide that there were going to be microtransactions. I don't know. It feels, I totally want to believe that they did not design this game around it, but I guess why people feel that way. But because there was, of course, already a Dragon's Dogma 1 where these systems were kind of similar, I don't think they, because one of the things you can buy are like, ways to fast travel. And fast travel is pretty limited in this game. So, the point is to go from point A to point B on foot. And they are selling a fairy stone, I think, right? That you can just fast travel to some of the locations that have these fast travel spots. So that kind of ruins the game in a way. And it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I think I've seen some of those posts where people are like, they stripped out fast travel just to sell it back to you. And that is incredibly dishonest, those people that are saying it. And I mean, it's clear they haven't played the game. They don't know the game, because everything that's for sale in the game through these microtransactions is in the in the game. And honestly, most of it you're going to be drowning in anyways. Like, there's pretty much nothing in here. I'm pulling it up right now that I ever
I saw one article talk about how you can like change your character and stuff, but that you can do that in the game as well. There's like a barber sort of thing, right?
Yeah, and it's with most of this stuff, it's like rift crystals, which are used for like altering and purchasing things to change, like your pawn's vocation or pawn's temperament, things like that. And so they're like, wow, you can pay to do this stuff. That's great. It's like, yeah, you can do this in the game and you're going to have so many rift crystals. It's not going to be like, I don't know why you would ever need to buy them. Like, same with wake stones, port crystals. These are all things you'll have in the game. Camping kits. Like, if you pay $3 for a camping kit in Dragon's Dogma 2, you're an idiot. Like, I had maybe six or seven in my party's inventories at all times, like not usually carried with me because they're very heavy. So usually I leave some back in my stash. But like, I never felt the need to get any of these things. And I never felt like, oh, I bet they're going to sell these. Or if they had a microtransactions, I'd be checking that out. Like, not once did any of these things feel mandated. And when you go and check other Capcom games, you know, none of this is new. I mean, the list for Devil May Cry 5 is very expansive. There's a ton, like many, many microtransactions. For Monster Hunter World, there's over 200 microtransactions available on
Steam. That's like emotes, right?
Yeah, it's all sorts of things. Emotes, cosmetics and statues for your little like home base, things like that.
But nothing gameplay, because I think like for Monster Hunter, it's like they see it more as pay to win because it's more like a live service game where if you could like get a trap for free or whatever to more easily take out the monster, even though you can buy these things or craft these things yourself, then that's probably why they're doing it, I think, for Dragon's Dogma, because it's single player. But I remember that the DMC actually being kind of crazy with it as well, like the sort of crystals and stuff you could buy.
They have like one blue orb for $1, three blue orbs for $2, five orbs for $3. It's like there's many, many. So none of this, unfortunately, is new. My frustration with microtransactions in games is specifically when the games have been balanced or built around pushing you into them. Like my frustration with Assassin's Creed Valhalla was that they, in my opinion, it seemed they balanced the game in a way that was extremely bloated. And so if you didn't want a super bloated time, you could look at things like the XP boost or the crafting like resource collection boosts. Odyssey also had the XP boost thing. They've been doing that for a while.
Yeah, but did you ever use those?
I tested them. Yeah, we did. It's been years, but I did it for Odyssey back when that dropped like 6 years ago. Jesus, we're old.
Yeah.
But when that dropped, I remember testing it, and the XP multiplier basically made it so you could bypass the side quest grind if you were to use it from the start of the game.
I think it got even worse, though, because I think you would out-level everything. So I think it clearly showed that it was just put on top of it. I don't think it was designed around it, because if you would use the XP booster from the start or halfway through, then you would be like way higher level than the recommended level. There was this like sort of gap, I think, for at one point you would have to be like 7 levels higher for the next main mission if you did not do side quests. But I totally get, like, those side quests were pretty great. So they just didn't find a good way to push people in that direction, because I don't think you should push. You just do things to entice people to play the side quest instead of having it be, like, a hard requirement.
Yeah. I mean, with Odyssey, they were pushing, like, that whole XP boost thing was designed for people that just wanted to play the main story and skip all the side stuff. And if in that capacity, it worked, because you would level so highly that you were going to like walk in and one shot every side quest if you had that equipped. But with the case of...
Yeah, they even had to make a feature to pause the XP booster.
Yeah, they had to put that in. Yeah. It was a separate button. Like, initially I remember they got me like the deluxe, whatever, premium, ultra, whatever edition that had it. And so by default, it was like enabled on my save. And I was like, can I turn it off? Because most people are not going to play with it. And it was like a very difficult thing for them to like turn off my XP boost they'd put on. So it was a whole thing. But with Dragon's Dogma 2, where I'm at is like reviewers didn't have access to microtransactions. Reviewers played the game without them. And the consensus is it's around a 9 out of 10, right around there. And so I'm like, if they rebalance it, if they issue a patch that makes it so port crystals now you don't get any, and camping supplies are impossible to find, and rift crystals plummet in drop rates and stuff, then there's reason absolutely, I think, to say that this quantifiably makes the game worse. But these microtransactions, I don't see how they make the game worse, because everybody that has reviewed it and played the game played it without them and still thought the game was really good. I understand, like, as a point of principle, maybe you want to boycott it because there shouldn't be microtransactions in single player games and stuff like that. That's fine. but I would love to see if people are being consistent with that, because then you're boycotting, like, I think Resident Evil 4 had a bunch of microtransactions. Pretty much anything Capcom has touched is going to have tons of microtransactions.
I think it's more the nature of this game. I think it's more about the fact that this, some people see this kind of as, like, there's no difficulty option, for example. So it really, just like a Souls-like from FromSoft, like, imagine them adding stuff like that to their game. I think it's kind of like that some people look at this game kind of similar, in a similar vein, where if you say, hey, I've achieved this in the game, everyone knows, okay, yeah, you could not cheat. There was no option to do that. Yeah, great job, nice achievement. And by implementing these things, they kind of ruin that. They say basically, yeah, you can bypass it, even though we know that, yeah, I mean, what you can do, like, you can buy the RC, which is needed to get, like, very high-level pawns. So you could, like, spend $100 to get a lot of the RC, and then from moment one, get, like, a level 50 pawn to join your party. And then, yeah, they will wreck the game. So there are, it does feel kind of like you can make the game easy mode if you pay. And I think that is the biggest thing where people are, yeah, that people are not happy about, because for Resident Evil, it's a single player horror game. Like, what are you gonna do, right? And DMC is kind of similar. I don't think, the challenge in that game is on the. I mean, that game can still be challenging, but it's still like a very linear type of game. And there's really this adventure where, yeah, you're supposed to lose your camping gear in the middle of the open world and kind of, yeah, good luck. And if you can then get your credit card and get a camping and have like a sort of Hunger Games airdrop on your, like, that kind of ruins the whole game. And even though it's single player and, yeah, you can control that yourself, I do think the sort of community around it makes it kind of like people are not that happy about it. And I don't think the first game had stuff like this, right?
Well, let me Google it. I mean, on the one hand, I think Dragon's Dogma 2 is actually far easier than people maybe remember or expected. Like, I didn't find the game particularly difficult. I mean, the closest thing I could point to is, like, this would be like in Elden Ring, if you were able to purchase, like, we mentioned it on the stream earlier, like, if you were able to purchase larval tears to respec your character or something. And it's like, yeah, you can get them in the game by completing mini bosses and side bosses and stuff, or finding them in difficult to find locations and stuff. Or you can purchase them for $5 a pop and then just respec. I can see why people would be frustrated there, especially because from software, that would be coming kind of out of nowhere. I think with my thing at the end of the day is, like, I think I'm just, I'm exhausted of people, like, demanding that every other game gets canceled for things. So already I'm, like, transparently just being clear with everybody, I'm already, like, kind of just exhausted from all of this. But with this stuff specifically, I just think the game is great without the microtransactions. So clearly you don't need to use the microtransactions. I agree, like, purchasing these microtransactions, I think, would actually ruin the game for you. I think if you were spending a lot of the money on camping 100%. Supplies, port crystals to drop everywhere you go, there's a fast travel point that you still have to use fairy stones. So you can't, and I don't think you can purchase fairy stones. So it's not like it immediately breaks the game.
Oh, you can't? Okay. But you can put the port crystals down. Yeah. Okay.
Because just in case somebody has not played it out there, you need the port crystal is like the location you fast travel to. You have to use a fairy stone in your inventory that you find to then kind of break it, toss it in the air, and then you all warp to the port crystal as the fast travel point. So it's meant to be kind of an emergency thing that you use as a last resort.
Oh, the wake stone is kind of OP though.
You can purchase, they have 5 variants, so it looks like you can only purchase 5 of them in total. I still think, like, if you are playing this game and you need to use 5 warp crystals, like, you are woefully underpowered for whatever you're taking on. I don't think, I think the yeah, only time I used a warp or a
Wake Stone
was once in a big boss fight. I don't think I ever used two in a boss fight or anything. Like, again, I think it's going to make the game worse. I think if you're buying these things, it's going to ruin the game for you. So it's kind of like karma yeah. if you choose to engage with microtransactions. Again, if I were the all like powerful dictator of gaming, I wouldn't allow this. Like, I'd be like, no, it's a single player game. No microtransactions. Let's all go like Baldur's Gate 3 and do that. But go ahead.
Oh yeah. No, I was like asking like, is this worth it for them? Because it doesn't feel like it. I can't imagine them selling enough for it to be worth it. It did go up, so it was first mostly negative, or like, yeah, and now it's mixed. So the reviews are going up. Obviously, a lot of people bought it, saw these, and were like, what the heck? It didn't even play it. And now they're like, wait, the game is actually pretty good. But is it worth it for them? Because now this could have been like a big launch, and now everyone or most people, I mean, we are of course still in our bubble, but this game is for the hardcore, so if a lot of people are talking about it in that sphere, it's still not great. But is it worth it for Capcom to have these very small, and usually we say microtransactions and then we're looking at a $20 outfit or whatever, so is it still a microtransaction? But looking at this, it's like €2, €1, €2, like it's very, very small purchases that you can make. Like, are they really getting enough money from this to warrant the lower reviews?
I mean,
so
honestly,
maybe a lot. Yeah.
Well, I was just
maybe
gonna say,
people
like,
skip it now.
I don't think, for one, I think the number of people that actually like boycott the game over this is shockingly small. Like, I don't buy for a second that this is going to have any significant impact on the game. I think it's there's two layers of the like outrage right now, and they kind of cross over. On the one hand, there's a lot of people who have PCs that for whatever stupid reason, the game just doesn't want to run on it. Even people with powerful PCs, Moist Critical couldn't get the game running properly last night when he was trying to play it. And I'm sure he's got a great PC. So there's, for whatever reason, some PCs that just don't want to run this game. And that sucks, and that's unacceptable, and those people should refund the game and leave a negative review because they couldn't play the damn game. I think that's absolutely fair. But I think some of that outrage is also crossing over into these other things, and so, like, people are becoming hammers in search of a nail. And so I think Capcom is probably taken a bit aback by the social media outrage over the microtransactions, because they've done this with pretty much every other one of their big releases for the last decade, and there hasn't really been that much outrage at all. And some people are like, well, it's different because it's a different type of game, or Monster Hunter's co-op and it's more cosmetic stuff, and you know, there's excuses for this and that, but the point is Capcom has put little microtransactions like this in most of their games and haven't really seen a lot of blowback, and they're seeing it now, and I think it's probably because there's a lot of people that are also very upset over the technical performance, and this is also something that they can latch on to.
And it's the first $70 game that helps probably a bit as well, that it's like, okay, that people have to spend more this time on PC.
Yeah. It's, I mean, people, like I said, are justified in being pissed about performance, and if the game doesn't run, that stuff is very valid. I won't pretend to know why certain high-end PCs can't run the game while others can. Who knows, but they should.
My high-end PS5, I'm doing just fine.
Super high-end PS5, yeah. It's just unfortunate, because nowadays with games, it feels like you can have an awesome game, but there's always going to be one asterisk next to it, or there's always one stupid thing about it that you're expected to call out and try to cancel it over. And it's just kind of dumb, and it just drives me crazy, and it diminishes the value of actual scandals and problems in games when you're getting outraged over every single little thing in games. I know I'm gonna get some flack for it. I just don't personally see this type of thing as that big of a deal. If they rebalance the game and adjust drop rates to push you into buying these things, absolutely, I will be freaking out when they do that.
But they won't.
I don't think they will. And the game that they provided is amazing without microtransactions. Yeah. So just don't buy the damn microtransactions.
Yeah, and there's not a store in the game. It's really like you only see it when booting up the game on your platform. So it's not like Ubisoft is, they're
not popping up with it. Like, oh, having trouble with this boss? Buy some more Wake Stones. They're not doing that.
No, that would be crazy.
Can you imagine if they did?
Let's see. I see some people say that it's more the fact that they hid it from the reviewers, but that's not true either because it was in the review guide. Just not a lot of people read that
because they don't want the spoilers.
We can conclude that. And I also think, of course they can maybe, do that differently. But usually these microtransactions or things appear when the game actually launches. That's always like I always try to get some Helix credits before release for Assassin's Creed or Ubisoft games to show these items and tell people hey, if you want to dress up like the Blood Dragon guy, you can do that.
I
can't do that before launch. So
I will just say this because I just dug through my email and found, I can't show it to you guys because it's, they don't want it shared. They do give us information saying the maximum number of port crystals that can be purchased is one. You can't buy 10 of them and plop them all over the map. So
okay.
You can only ever buy one. Wake Stones, you can buy up to 5. The packs of Rift Crystals are all over the place. So you can buy like one the 2,500, 4 of the others.
Yeah.
Character editor thing, you can only do that once. The makeshift jail key, you can only buy one of those. All the others, only one camping kit, only one Harpy smoke beacon. Only one.
Yeah, so then, is it worth it? Because the wheels, they're not gonna get the wheels because they are like, what the heck? Can I only buy one? So yeah, it's kind of like weird.
What it comes off to me as is that this is like a Capcom publisher executive thing where they're like, hey, put microtransactions out in the game, and they're like, okay, and they did it because they checked the box from the publisher, and then they just move on. Because I agree, I don't know who the hell is buying these things, especially because it'll make the game worse. But
usually hear that there are like maybe 5% of the people buying the microtransactions, but because there are like 0.5% of those people are wills and they buy everything, that makes it worth it. But that's not even possible here. So
yeah.
But okay. Rise of the Ronin.
Rise of the Ronin. I've had an inkling with Rise of the Ronin. For a while.
I had some people in the chat from my stream say that Luke was right, so that was nice.
Yeah, it's there were some red flags about it, but why don't you tell us what your experience with the game has been like in case anybody's not been able to see the review yet.
Yeah, of course, the full review is on the channel, and people were kind of surprised, and I get it, because so how it worked is I could first do a preview of the first 5 hours, and then continue playing and make a review based on that. And I liked the first 5 hours way more because at that point of course in a preview when you get hands on with a game you want to stay optimistic and be like, yo, this is a huge open world game, and
it
usually
gets
the
better,
story
right?
I hope so. Which often happens. I would argue that, for example, Dragon's Dogma only gets better if you get further into it. But for Rise of the Ronin, the open world structure, there are like only 6 types of activities. So in the first few hours, it's kind of fun. But if you then realize, if you get to a new region, that it's basically the same. That does not work. But it was in particular, of course, for people who are totally not aware, it's like the PS5 exclusive. It's from Team Ninja. They did Neo, Wolong, and really the core issue with this game is that they wanted to make 2 games, but they blended them together, and what you get is a very incoherent package. It's super weird because if you do the main quest, you're only going from very small linear instance mission to very small linear instant mission with some open world stuff in between. And these main missions are like 10 to 15 minutes and they're all the same. the locations look pretty cool. They're all varied, but you still have to kill every enemy. And then there's a boss at the end. And the combat is really great. That's what's kind of helping this game. But still, if I kind of go for these, to these games like a Ghost of Tsushima or Assassin's Creed also for the story, and you in particular know the Assassin's Creed titles always have like a really cool ending. Ghost of Tsushima had very cool characters, and if you wanted to learn more about them, there were cool side missions. And in this game, there are these, there are multiple characters, like quite a lot of them actually, and because every main mission is the same, they need to have that boss at the end, you get into very weird situations where the mission is, your friend is, you have to tell your friend that his boss is captured, so we have to rescue them. So yeah, you go do that in the main mission, you kill some thugs that are like in that area, sure. And then you meet this guy that you have to talk to. The mission objective really says to talk to this person, and then he grabs a pole arm and you're like, okay, let's do this, and you fight with like lethal weapons, you do like insane combos, blood everywhere, and then the fight ends, and it's like, well, nice fight, so why do you come here? And I'm like, what, like what happened here? Why am I fighting this companion that I'm just here to tell about this sort of story, or that this friend is captured? And stuff like that happens very often, and it really takes away from the story. Like one moment you're chilling with a companion, and then the next moment that companion is the final boss of that main mission. It's super weird, and when stuff like that happens, I just could not care about the story anymore. And when you combine that with an open world that is not interesting, I like to do the bandit camps, obviously, but this game has them. The combat makes it kind of fun. Like, the bosses you fight there are varied in terms of, like, I mean, they are totally the same enemies that you fight all the time, but still, they have, like, different weapons. They do some different moves, so that's kind of fun. But if there's no reward for doing them, if at one point you figure out, okay, I'm just grabbing new loot with a higher number, and there are perks on it, but it's all very limited, like they only give 5% more of this during night, you're like, okay, man, what am I doing here? And I kind of hit that point after 30 hours, and I was like, I don't want to continue playing. And that's kind of wild for me in these types of games, that just every element, and there are a lot of elements, just did not hit. And then you have a co-op as well, and you can only do co-op in these very small main missions. So not even in the open world, which would have been cool. But no, only in these main missions. And maybe that is the reason why they wanted to have a boss at the end of every main mission, to have something cool to do in co-op. But the problem is, if you play this game in co-op, for one, if you go to a mission, you can like select co-op, you can invite a friend, but that friend can only join you if they are either at that point in the story or have already completed the mission. And if you would play together at the same time, you would be playing in co-op, then you would go back to the open world alone, then you would do the sort of narrative part where you would talk to NPCs, then you would get to the main mission, you would have to invite your friend again. And it's like, there are so many elements, it all doesn't work together. Like, they really had to pick a lane. Like, are you going to be this main mission, like more Neo style game, or are you going to be this huge open world with cool things to do, and that hopefully connects the dots in other parts as well? So I was kind of disappointed overall. I expected more, and the game is the worst looking PS5 exclusive by a long shot. It's kind of wild.
That video you posted on Twitter,
that was crazy. And that was with the day one patch. I'm not sure if you saw the review, because I actually was ready to go even more ham on it, because there were even parts where there were only 7 people on the street, max. And I would get frame drops left and right. It would look extremely ugly. But then they did release the day one patch, which kind of tweaked that. So well, yeah, luckily that kind of fixed those issues. But I was like, how can this game run this poorly, look this bad, and be exclusive to the PS5?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
And we were talking last week about like the potential brand damage it could do to PlayStation, putting PlayStation Studios or yeah. PlayStation Interactive Entertainment on the box. Because when people see this in the store, they're like, oh, it's Sony. So like it's probably Ghost of Tsushima levels of polish and refinement and beauty and production value. And it's not. It is crazy. Like, I don't even really understand what's happening in some of these shots. It's so horrifyingly like rough. And this is after the patch. Like,
I could have been like, here's the footage of me actually playing, but I was like, yeah, I have to show the day one patch, but still it looks bad. The shadows popping in and out. It's crazy.
It's ridiculous, man. But I mean, it goes to show you, like I've talked before about when games try to do something new, they will then be held to that standard. So, you know, if you're talking about Rise of the Ronin, it's going open world. Yeah, okay, you go open world as a studio. It's one of your first, like, forays into this kind of style of game. Or with Starfield, you try to go space sim. You know, whenever you go into this thing and you put yourself into that category, you're going to be judged against the others that have done it as well, maybe for the same price or in the same category and ballpark. And for them, that like they're charging full price, full double A, or for rather,
yes, $70. Yeah.
And so it's going to be compared to Ghost of Tsushima from years ago. And when the game looks significantly worse, it runs way worse, it has bizarre choices made, but it's all under the Sony banner. It reflects really poorly in my mind on Sony. It just makes them look like, okay, so quality control is out the window. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm curious because that's kind of what you see if you make a review about the game that people pre-ordered a lot. You see a lot of like copium, like, no, this other person said that this is actually good, so I'm going to listen to them. And I'm like, sure, I hope you enjoy it. But there was this one, this conspiracy, there was this one guy like in the comments, like, talking to everyone that was like, oh, this does kind of look bad. No, he's just a bad player. And he also said, yeah, Ubisoft paid him to make this game look bad, so Assassin's Creed Red looks better when it releases. And I'm like, wow, something. How can you come up with those theories?
Yeah, man.
But
it's, I, you know what? If we lived in that world where YouTubers just got cut massive checks as part of these like interwoven theories, that would be, you know,
I mean, that would totally easily come up, and then it would be the end of you. Like, we've seen many YouTubers canceled because of things they did, and rightfully so. So I don't think
the company could be like attacked by regulators and sued by, like, that's,
oh yeah,
that's not allowed. Like, they if you've ever done a brand deal, they are very strict. Like, you have to say hashtag ad or sponsored, or you have to do paid promotion tags on YouTube. Like, they're very, very clear about it. Even for reviews, they typically want you to be like, thank you to X publisher for the review code, that type of thing. So it's just so funny. Like, so we're going to half admit to things. Like, so I got the review code from Sony or from whoever, but I'm not going to disclose a relationship with something. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. The whole thing is insane.
Yeah. They're just looking for things. And then, I wanted this to be great. Trust me. Oh, wait, my food is here. So I will be.
Okay, go for it. Yeah, no, I think we've all been hoping that this would pull itself off. But it's just, you can't lie when the evidence is in your face. And in this case, like, we can see clearly there are major issues, and to excuse this kind of stuff away requires a level of cope that I just don't know how it's manageable. Maybe you can excuse all this stuff for sake of the combat system. If you really like the combat, cool. But for $70, man, it's hard to argue that this is tolerable. Like, this is the game running well, and it's like this, you know, it's just, It's crazy. But unfortunately,
I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Like, when you get more time with it, I think you should do a video on it. If you,
I'll try probably putting in another couple hours. I want to get to the more of the open world stuff and see what it has to offer. But it's not easy to go open world. It's just not. It's quite difficult. It takes a different skill set, and technologically speaking, it's much more demanding. And I think this game just shows you can't just take an old dog, have it do a bunch of new tricks. It's really not easy to do. And you're seeing kind of the growing pains of it.
Yeah, and it's like the first few hours, you're unlocking a new feature, like left and right. And I'm like, stop it with all these. You have like a bond system, so every character you meet, you can like level up your bond with them. But it's very easy, like do a side quest with them, give them a gift, or make a choice that they like. But it takes forever to unlock like a new level, and then you get like a reward. And there are, I'm not kidding, like more than 20 or 30 of these characters. I'm like, what do they expect me to do? And you have this, we already talked about it in the previous episode about the cats that you can pet. Okay, it's like fun to do 1-2 cats maybe. And there's like a small twist to it where the cat is asleep, so you have to like sneak up to it. But there are like 70 cats in the open world that you have to find. It's like, that's why. Why is there so much stuff in this game? You could have just focused on a few core things, and I think this game would have been way better. And that's why I think the Neos and the Wolongs were better, because they clearly knew what they wanted. And I think those were the games that they maybe more wanted to make. You really see still this Souls-like sort of DNA that they now have with the Neo titles in this game, where they're using a lot of things, or they're introducing a lot of like things to make this game more accessible. Like, the difficulty was a big question, of course. Is it hard? Now, there are 3 difficulties, so that's nice. And they do many things to make the game easier, but you're still at one point out of nowhere, like you're feeling good, you got like a great loadout, you're like, okay, this is going pretty well. Then there's this boss like pretty early in the game, and it's like Sekiro level crazy. It's like woo, like it does insane attacks, and you're like, what am I supposed to do? And you're parrying, and and it's like way tougher than any other boss you've killed. So I was stuck like for 40 minutes there, and I was like, am I doing something wrong? But no, they still have those very high skilled enemies there. And I do think that that's also going to be a turnoff for people, especially because at one point you will fight a boss 1v1. And then 20 minutes later, that boss, sometimes it's like, thank you for the... Or like these people are like infiltrating this sort of area, and you have to fight them off, and you're protecting something important. And then you kill them, and they're like, that's all for today. Goodbye. And then they just walk away. Like, no, I want you dead. Like, why are you just walking away? And then the next, like, 20 minutes, you're fighting that boss again with another boss. So there's, like, duo bosses. And like, well, I was already struggling against this one guy. Why are there 2 of them suddenly? So it's crazy. There's just so much in this game.
It just seems like a quintessential example of like biting off more than they could chew. They decided they wanted to go with like Ghost of Tsushima, but still do their old school combat stuff. But then they also wanted like some Ubisoft side activities, petting cats and things. Like, they just wanted to do everything. And then they kind of learned the hard way that you can't, or at least it's really tough to do that much. And it seems, at least from all of the like the graphical problems, the technical problems, it seems like they probably just didn't have the hardware or the engine capabilities to keep up with their vision. I mean, maybe this is one of those situations, kind of like The Witcher 1. You go back, you play the original Witcher game, and it's like, oh baby, it shows that this was like their first foray into this type of thing. It's technically first foray into anything. And then they got better as they learned the lessons from the last one. So maybe the next game they do is going to also be an open world game, and they'll take lessons they learned from this and improve the technology and build it and build it and build it. And maybe in a couple more releases, they'll be able to just drop pretty regular, you know, Elden Ring clones, and that'll be great. But this is not it, it seems.
Yeah, but it's probably because Sony also came in and were like, yeah, 2024 is looking not so great for us. Can you make, maybe they were like working on it as like a very smaller title and they were like, this looks great. Can we like turn this into a bigger thing? And then they were like, okay, let's do it. That could also be the case. Because we, of course, heard that Sony won't have like a big title until at least April 2025. So that's why Stellar Blade and Rise of the Ronin are kind of, yeah, taking the spotlight so far. But it's not great. And I'm curious what people will think when they finally get more hands on it. So
yeah, we'll see. I mean, the broader thing I think for today with two games launching, Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2, is just that unfortunately for whatever reason right now, games that, well, it technically runs is the new standard. Like, yeah, you can technically play Rise of the Ronin and get to the credits. That's true. And Dragon's Dogma 2, it's like, for some PCs, you just can't play it. Some people are reporting crashes and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
and
we have now Livy in the chat saying as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Play the game on PC, keeps crashing. Sucks to hear.
Yeah, and that's great. And I have no idea why some PCs are able to run it, others crash. Like, I was able to run it on an ROG Ally, which is a handheld gaming PC, basically. And I was able to play it there on low settings at, like, 27, 28 frames. It didn't look great, but it worked. But then other people are having, you know, they have, like, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 PC, and they can't even get the thing to boot. So I have no idea what's happening. It's well above my pay grade. But that type of thing is ridiculous. You absolutely should refund when that happens. And even when it's running properly on a very nice computer, it still is all over the place with performance, especially in cities and stuff, you know, super hardcore CPU bottlenecked and stuff. So it's just frustrating to see that the standards for performance for AAA releases seem to be dropping, which is...
yeah.
Extremely annoying and frustrating. Was I playing on 4K with those 30 to 40 frames? Yeah, so pretty much all of the, almost all of my gameplay was running with DLSS enabled to get to 4K. It wasn't native 4K or anything. So for a good chunk of the game, I was playing on quality, and then for another portion of the game, I was playing on balanced. They issued a patch a few days in that improved performance a good bit, but didn't like magically fix everything. Who knows?
Now we have Monster MG saying Horizon Forbidden West at least looks incredible on PC, so there's a positive for the week. What is the Steam numbers on that? Do you want to guess? I think should I say the max for Horizon Zero Dawn, so you can kind of take it from there?
Sure.
It was 55,000.
I mean, I think for this, I've heard like no one talk about it.
Yeah.
Like no one. So I'm going to guess 5,000.
Whoa. Wow. No, I was surprised when I saw these numbers. I was with you, and it's still, I don't know who makes these decisions. Why launch this game this week? It's crazy, but it's at 26,000.
Wow. That is five times higher than I thought it was going to be. I mean, yeah. I just was surprised. Like, nobody was talking about it. I had no idea it was dropping until somebody in chat on, like, Monday mentioned it. I was like, really? That's happening already? I just kind of put it out of my mind, thought it was, like, April or something, but no.
And PlayStation did zero marketing for it. That's right.
Because I think they were marketing Rise of the Ronin instead. Oops.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of funny, by the way, as well. I got like a notification that YouTube Gaming, the Twitter account, shared a video. Did you see it?
Yeah, we looked at it on stream. They just casually forgot to mention a pretty important part of your review, too.
No. The crazy part is they shared my preview.
Oh. Oops.
So they shared my video from 2 weeks ago instead of my... yeah, disappointing review. So they were like, oh, he's like, oh, it's pretty cool. But no.
That's amazing. Wow.
That's, how is that possible? Yeah.
Oh, did you guys hear about the Will Smith zombie game that nobody heard about? It launched and flopped because they said nothing about it. Yeah, I saw the little story about it. They apparently, some company hired Will Smith to be a like spokesperson or to be in a commercial, and he has like a skin in the game, but they never distributed the trailer anywhere, so it just didn't do anything. So like they probably paid him $1 million to do that, and it went nowhere. Big ol' swing and a miss there. So yeah, Rise of the Ronin, little bit of a weren't.
Yeah, I'm curious there if you get more time with it, maybe we can like revisit it, and maybe if other people in the chat have something to say as well when they get their hands on it. Although I was even, and I don't have that often. Like people were like, okay, but at what price point do you I just don't. I just really think that time is more precious than spending it on Rise of the Ronin, and I'm not often like that. I'm not often that I'm like. So and that was also, of course, a thing. People were like, oh, you recommended Suicide Squad, but he loved. And I'm like, I did not recommend Suicide if you watched the video. But of course, that's how the internet works.
Yeah.
I only said, I still think if it's like $20 or on Game Pass, I think it's worth it to just play through the campaign. And I don't think it's worth it to touch Rise
I'd say like
for $70.
Yeah, it's like Game Pass, especially if they patch it, like you'll get 10 hours out of it, sure.
It's like
a terrible live service game, but yeah, you'll get 10 hours
out of it. They're gonna do the season one though next week. Are you gonna check it out?
Yeah, I'm gonna be checking that out.
I know.
I don't know. I mean, I would love for it to be like 10 hours of new content and all new areas and combat and craziness, like new boss encounters, but let's be real, it's gonna be 20 minutes of a cutscene to introduce, you know, teenage angsty wish.com Joker, and then they're going to have a few waves of missions and then a reskinned Brainiac fight that's probably like Green Lantern this time instead of the Flash.
Oh yeah, they already showed that, and then the mid-season update will have Superman. So yeah, I really think I'm gonna try everything in one stream. Let's see if I can make that happen.
That's yeah, you should.
Probably gonna it's kind of wild, man. It's but I mean, there will at least be now 6 missions in the rotation instead of 3. So
yeah,
so
we're getting there. We're on our way.
We're getting there. So in 3 months, we have 9 missions, but then those 6 you've already played a lot of won't be that exciting. It's going to be interesting, but yeah, I will be streaming the Joker. At least I want to see how he fires a pistol. That would be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, too bad Batman's already gone. Could have put that pistol.
I mean, is he though? That's the theory, right?
I really think they're just gonna bring back waves. They're gonna be like, he was an evil clone. Now you get to do it again. And they're just gonna keep doing that kind of thing. So, one thing that did actually look very good this week, though, that came out of left field and I had no idea of. I realize I'm bouncing around a little bit. I apologize.
No, but that's fine. That's fine.
Rise of Hydra. This was shown off as part of the like Unreal Engine showcase thing that they were doing with GDC. And basically it's from a studio headed up by Amy Hennig. And if you guys don't know Amy, she is one of the like head honchos, one of the OGs from Naughty Dog. She was one of the people that like created the Uncharted franchise. And she left Naughty Dog after Uncharted 3 in the crossover to Uncharted 4. There were some disputes. I've talked about it before in videos, but basically it looks like they just had some creative differences. She liked doing more campy, like Hollywood blockbuster style things that don't take themselves too seriously. Naughty Dog really wanted to go the Last of Us direction and ground things more. And she had other exciting opportunities, like a Star Wars project, all sorts of stuff. So she left and had a bunch of her games and projects canceled for like a decade. And then we heard news that she was working on some other stuff. And we didn't know what it was. We heard rumblings, but didn't really know. And then we got an actual trailer for it. And this thing is ridiculous. I mean, this is running in Unreal Engine 5.4. And I mean, if you think it looks too good to be true, if you think it looks graphically insane, they actually showcased, as part of it, demos of the technology working. So they were able to like move the camera freely and change the particle effects and remove the mask from characters and all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, this is actually running. Probably running on a $5,000 PC, but it's actually running. And It just looks crazy. So it's a new game targeting 2025. It's set in 1943 with Captain America, Black Panther. It looks extremely high production value, very, very cinematic.
Yeah, you don't expect it because it's kind of a new team. It's like Skydance Media, like So they got the goods. But I think like Unreal Engine 5 makes everything look great. I mean, Immortals, of course, also looked really good. But yeah, we have to see gameplay. Like that's kind of the thing. You already said it. It's like, how will this play? Did we see gameplay? I'm like looking at the Captain America part where he like throws his shield and then hits like multiple enemies. Was that like the start of like a combat encounter? Is that like a finisher or is this all a cutscene? So
yeah, I mean, what this reminded me of when I saw it was The Order 1886 for a couple reasons. For one, it looks graphically stunning, as did The Order 1886. Secondly, they did the cinematic thing where they do a wider aspect ratio with the black bars on top and bottom. And that's something that The Order 1886 did specifically because it means you only have to render like the frames in the center. You don't have to render the black bars. So you're physically like, well, not physically, but you're actually rendering less pixels, which allows for more frame time to be spent on the rest of the image, so you can increase fidelity since you're effectively running it at a lower resolution. So, you know, it's in that case, that was a game that looked stunning, but when it came to gameplay, it was like, wasn't super strong, and it was very, very short because they had put so much effort into the presentation. So I this doesn't mean that this is going to be a great game. It could very well be like a 3-hour like sort of visual novel with some quick time events. That could be all it is. Or maybe it's actually like a huge, you know, semi-open world adventure game or something.
No,
but yeah. I think more likely it's a very small in scope, linear narrative game where you're going to be oogling and ogling at the cool graphics and stuff. And it's going to be like an interactive movie. That's what my gut would predict, because that's typically how these types of games go when they look
this
good. It's
just weird that they are not talking about that. That's kind of the red flag here, I think. Like, I want to, of course, be really optimistic, but we never see a story trailer as the first trailer for a game. Like, that never happens. So, obviously, this was like a Unreal Engine 5 sort of event, so it kind of makes sense. But I do think you would get ahead of it if there was a lot of good news, like, oh, this is a big game, blah, blah, blah. So I think, yeah, saying that it's probably going to be pretty small would make sense.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think it looks great. I do think there's a market for people who want basically like a 4-hour Marvel thing that just looks pretty.
Yeah.
I think if they charge $70 for it, they're in trouble. But I do, like, I know people who are crazy into Marvel and would pay probably $30-$40 for just a really cool little experience like this.
Yeah, this might be the start of kind of that they're like, okay, let's make a smaller game. And then, because I also think, like, for example, a subscription like Game Pass kind of, I mean, it's not coming to Game Pass, but in general, that's, of course, kind of where the industry is moving towards to have, like, they can better have a new game every month that's like 5 hours, because then people keep subscribing instead of 3 big titles that people still play in 1 month and then unsubscribe for. So maybe this game does really well, because if you look at it, like the Marvel games, you would think, we talked about it before, but they have not been a huge success. Guardians of the Galaxy underperformed. Avengers, of course, huge flop. Like, maybe this is the way for them to go. To not be this like game that people can play for a long time, or that has like this huge budget, but instead is like a very cool cinematic, like a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
But that you can then actually play.
They're like, hey, people like Marvel movies. Let's just make an interactive one and charge $40 for it. Like, I think that probably works better than
Avengers. Where's the info, though?
Yeah.
We know it's coming 2025, but that's kind of it. And that's, usually you don't bury that unless it's like kind of bad news. So they or maybe they don't know yet.
It could be up in the air. I mean, it could be that this was, you know, part of the Epic contract for the Unreal Engine demo. It was like, hey, we're going to give you this huge platform. You showcase some of the tech and everything, make it look really cool. And then you'll get to actually like formally announce it and do like a big trailer at the Game Awards or Summer Game Fest or something. I agree. Like, it's, if the news were really good, or if the news was that, hey, this is actually like a big open world, or actually this is an adventure game that's 30 hours long. Like, if they could brag about that, I think they would brag about it. And the fact that they aren't probably shows it's going to be something much smaller and more lean.
Yeah.
And that's not
bad.
Bad. It's just they need to be clear with the expectations. Because the problem with the Order 1886 was that they charged full price for it, and then people got it and were getting through it in 5-6 hours.
And it was like one of the first PS4 exclusives, so everyone's like, oh, this looks awesome. And they never were really clear about that, I think. And also the final boss was just the same as a mid-game boss fight. So it was like, what?
Yeah.
But I remember still, when great I, game. Like, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
I was just going to say, I remember when I played the Order 1886 for the first time, and like I did the big boss fight, and I was like, okay, here the game starts, and then the credits roll. And it's like,
yeah,
what?
That sucks. We will never know what happened. But that was weird. That was, but it is still a game that you remember. So it did leave a mark. And going back to something like Rise of the Ronin, I don't think people will remember it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing you got to give it credit for. I mean, what other games a decade after launch are still being compared for their graphical prowess and stuff? Like, we pulled up on stream on Wednesday after this dropped the original announcement trailer for The Order 1886 from like 2013. And that game, if that was released today, would still be very, very passable. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy. It was so far ahead of its time. But
are they still around? Ready at Dawn? They were bought by Oculus, but of course making
VR
games. But
they've been doing VR stuff. They did that one that's like in space. That
Lone
one VR
Echo.
Game. Yeah, and I've played that one. That one's good, but it's most of the like hardcore narrative talent, it seems, went to Naughty Dog and Santa Monica. So they live on, but not at Ready at Dawn, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one more thing about this game. I really hope that you say, okay, show at the Summer Game Fest. I don't know if this is like a short game. I would prefer to see it when it launches like a week later or something, because that's kind of the thing with Marvel. They sometimes can overshow things. And if this is a 4-hour experience, then you can only show so much.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. For me, it was interesting to see that there, even though Marvel is kind of in a low, and I see some people NOS saying, I'm personally burned out of Marvel stuff. I know many people are, but still, this trailer has 3.4 million views on the Marvel channel, and there are probably real uploads as well. I did a tweet about it that blew up. So there is still hype for it, and I think them going for like the 1943, it looking this great, there's still like an audience obviously for this. And I did not see anything, of course, when Guardians was announced, oh, I did not like Avengers, I'm not gonna buy this. So I did not see anything about that. So seems like we moved away from that. I hope this this hits for them.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, it's another great showing for Amy, because Amy's been kind of AFK for a decade basically.
Yeah.
Sucks. And it's too bad, because she really is like one of the leading video game designers in the industry when you look at her portfolio, but she's just had trouble getting things out the door because she keeps partnering with like EA or, you know, whatever other company that just ends up, we actually overhired, everybody's fired, you know, just canning everybody. So
we don't like single player games anymore, but why did you hire me for a single player game? Yeah,
you've already spent like $20 million on this. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But that, it just is what it is. But hopefully this is the start of her comeback, because it looks really good. But I think the big thing is just going to be setting expectations. If it's QuickTime events, okay, but be clear. The worst thing for this would be to just keep it kind of coy like it is now and then release it for $70 and people play it. It's 3.5 hours long and it's all like QuickTime events. Like that, that's when you'll have a problem. But if they're clear, they can dodge it.
I put in one extra thing. I don't think we can, we don't have to like talk long about it, but if I still thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
So this is from Reuters. There, they had like an article about Tencent, and of course Tencent is kind of the developer behind the Assassin's Creed Jade game. So that's the mobile game. Did you play it? Not yet, right?
No, I never got the invite.
Okay. No, I it was also playable at Gamescom. That's where I got my hands on it, and it's basically Assassin's Creed Odyssey for your phone in ancient China, which is kind of crazy. But similar to what we kind of discussed with, people kind of moving away from licensed games, with EA, of course, canceling that Mandalorian title, and yeah, basically the amount of money you have to pay to these companies like a Marvel or Marvel Disney is so much that the game has to reach like way higher sales numbers to be on the same level. In terms of profitability versus a title you own yourself. And that seems to be kind of going on with Tencent. So they've been not doing too hot. They are, of course, enormous. Like the biggest Chinese media company, I think.
I think globally also they're the biggest revenue maker in gaming. Yeah.
Yeah, which is crazy. And they, they've been working on the Assassin's Creed Jade for 4 years, according to this article. But instead of, and they said during Gamescom that it was going to launch this year, and they kind of made, they had the booth, they made a big deal about it, but it seems that they are kind of stepping away from it. They're still going to launch it, but they put redeployed hundreds of staff from the team developing Jade into its recently released party game Dreamstar. I'm not even sure if Dreamstar is out here, but that's something they own themselves. And like, if I type in Dreamstar, I get nothing about a game on Google. Let's see. Mm. Dreamstar game. I think it's, like, only in China then still. It seems like Fall Guys. Yeah, it's like Fall Guys. Oh, my God. It is, like, if you can look up gameplay, it's basically just straight Fall Guys.
Fall Guys.
And like, all the party animals and those sort of games, like, combined. So, imagine working on Jade and then having to go to this game. That's a kind of a change.
Oh yeah.
But they're seeing a lot of like success with that, and they own that. So yeah, it makes sense that they want to focus on that. And like the latest part of a pivot at Tencent, which now looking to move away from developing Western franchise for mobile due to thin margins again. They already paid a lot to Ubisoft to have the Assassin's Creed license, but probably every microtransaction spent on that game, Ubisoft will probably get a percentage of that as well. So everything in Dreamstar is 100% for Tencent, or 100%, of course, they have to share it with iOS and Google as well. But that seems to be more, again, moving to in-house things that you fully own, that you get more money from. But it's kind of weird now with Assassin's Creed Jade, because they were doing this huge marketing push, and it's basically Assassin's Creed Odyssey again. They do have some cool systems like a co-op, but also in instance missions. There were some mythical bosses you could fight together as well. There was this story. So again, it was pretty crazy for a mobile title to be this like big open world RPG, but the systems again were really like based on Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So if Assassin's Creed Red releases at the end of this year and we play that, and that is like basically the spiritual successor to Odyssey from that team, I think Jade will look and feel even more dated than it already kind of was. So maybe on mobile people will be like, oh, but it's still great because I can play it everywhere. But I do think it's going to hurt the game quite a lot having launching after Red,
right,
when that game has like a sick post launch as well, because I do think there will be some overlap. But yeah, Tencent making more money from their own games, which also kind of makes sense. But yeah, it's not a good It's an interesting, I think mostly, like, I know not a lot of people will care about the Jade game, but it's mostly, once again, this sort of companies looking, yeah, at their own IP. EA, of course, said that as well. We're focusing more on our own IP moving forward because, yeah, we own that we can do everything we want.
Yeah. And it all of this just reminds me again of, like, what happened with EA, where EA recently announced they're trying to move away from licensed franchises. They want to do stuff that they own the rights to maximize margin and revenue, or rather profits over revenue. And
yeah,
I think it's because a lot of these big mega corporations, it's all about make number go up. Like, that's all they're trying to do. All the executives care about bigger numbers. That's what you want. So you can either get new customers to make those numbers go up because more people buying things, okay, we make more. But when you run out of more people, or people are not, you know, you're not seeing the same growth, it's kind of stagnating, you start to look for other ways to increase margin. One of the ways to do that is to try to shift and pivot off of licensed deals where, like you said, you're paying 30% of every dollar spent to the app store, and then Ubisoft maybe takes another 20-30%. So, like,
I think, yeah, like something like that.
You start to lose over half of the revenue, or if we just say half the revenue, on each dollar when you could.
Well, the costs are the same.
Yeah, the costs are the same.
Yeah, you're paying the same developers. And you hope that because it's Assassin's Creed, more people will look at it as like if they made Jade Odyssey or whatever. I know that's. Is that actually a game?
There's
like an old, yeah. But then, like, you would get everything. But will people care about it? Like, we would not be talking about it right now, for example. So
yeah. So we'll see kind of how it develops. But it is interesting to see them kind of casually pivoting off of it. Before it's even technically out, it's just interesting, but.
I think they would have, if they launched it around the Red, when Red was like in the hype, because I'm really, what do you think? To kind of, make a small side.
I mean, I have to think there's probably a little bit of crossover, but as far as I can tell, Red is supposed to be like the next evolution of the franchise. It's going to be on, you know, current gen hardware. It's going to be very graphically impressive. And I agree that'll make Jade look out of date. But Jade is also like a mobile game. And I think that there's a lot of people out there who don't have modern consoles who would to play. So I don't think it would be like a total loss. It definitely wouldn't perform as well.
What I meant was that I do think that if they, I basically had two questions. Like, one was, I do think that if they had it out when the Red marketing machine was kind of going, got the cinematic trailer for it and the screenshots and the first information, and people are like, oh wow, I can't wait, there's an RPG I can play right now, they might jump to the phone while they otherwise won't, because otherwise, like, I got Red already, why would I play this on my phone, which is probably the inferior game. So maybe that would have helped, but I'm also curious, what do you think? Will we see Valhalla excitement levels for Red?
I think, I think so, because I'm anticipating it when we finally see it. I think it is going to look like a notable leap forward. And I think that's one thing that perhaps Mirage actually unintentionally is helping Ubisoft with, is we got Mirage, and it's with an old tool set. It did what it needed to do. It was good, but it was still Valhalla, basically, just with a bunch of really complicated reskins. And my understanding is that Red's going to be much more of a step forward, even a leap forward in some ways. And so I think it's going to show a lot better, and it will show, like, wow, some progress has been made. They're doing some new stuff. And I think that's going to be very exciting for a lot of people. And I think, you know, the difficulties of Rise of the Ronin also probably help. So it looks like the check they gave you.
Maybe Ubisoft paid the developers on Rise of the Ronin to make that game less great. Yeah.
What's more likely? A grand conspiracy, or maybe it's just not very good. I don't know. I think it's going to be big. The only thing is that the Assassin's Creed Infinity stuff starts to get me more and more worried the more I hear about it. Insider Gaming report where they're like, yeah, and there's going to be mini battle passes for each game. And it's like,
I really think we won't hear about that till like 1 week before, or like a few weeks before launch, like those details, right? Because they usually save the post-launch for later, and they know, like, they got some free sort of look at what the reaction will be, thanks to Tom Henderson. So they're probably going to be like, let's first sell them on this epic Japanese adventure and then talk about the microtransactions and the details. Yeah. So yeah. I'm sure that when we hopefully get the chance to interview one of those people and we ask them about it, it's like, yeah, we will not talk about Infinity. We're only focused on Red or whatever they will end up calling it. Mm-hmm. So, but looking at the cinematic trailer for Valhalla, like, the views were insane for that. Let's see. 9.3 million. I thought it was more, but
that's still a lot compared to most. Yeah, there's re-uploads on IGN, on every GameSpot, everywhere. I mean, it depends, I think, also when they announce it. When did they drop that trailer for Valhalla?
April 26th? At the top of my head, April something. April 30th. April 30th, 2020.
Okay. So, I mean, if they do something similar, it's...
We're maybe 1 month away.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I'm still waiting on Star Wars Outlaws. I feel like that's just been AFK as well, but I don't...
Oh, we have breaking news.
Oh, really?
Yeah. GTA 6 production reportedly falling behind. Rockstar urges staff to return to the office to avoid a delay.
Oh. So is that how they're going to get them back in the office? Is that...
Kotaku was told by sources with knowledge of the situation that early 2025 is currently the goal. Whoa, okay, that's crazy. However, they learned that it's becoming more and more likely that the sequel might not land until late 2025. It's also possible that it could even slip into 2026 as production reportedly falls behind, as every Rockstar title in the history.
This is so unlike them.
Yeah, yeah. Huh?
Jesus.
It's like, man. Capcom adding microtransactions to their game.
Yeah, it's like... technically always done this, but I'm still surprised. I mean, we know that they've been trying to get employees back in. If you guys missed the story from probably a couple of weeks ago where they announced they wanted all of their employees to come back into the studio and work in the office. I think it was, they required 3 days out of the week, or maybe they had been requiring 2 days out of the week, but they were then moving to full time. And part of that was to lock it down. They were worried about leaks. And it's easier to manage that when you're inside the studio, but maybe this is all part of the grand scheme to get people back in the office or the studio or something. But it also, I mean, there's a bunch of conflicting information. Some people are like, no, there's no evidence that it actually increases productivity to be in the studio physically. Other places say it definitely does increase productivity. Rockstar clearly thinks it improves productivity. So we'll see. I would guess it's delayed. I mean, I just don't think getting people in the office will magically fix it, because they're going to run into more issues, right? Like,
yeah, if they already are more than one, or like 1 year removed from it, saying it's going to get hard, then I don't think they're going to make it.
Yeah. And like,
I mean,
it seems like for them to be like, yeah, we're starting to slip behind, we might delay it a year. Like, what problems are they running into? Like, it's got to be pretty significant, I mean, if they're going to delay it that long. Unless they care that much about... Because, like, they would potentially be delaying it out of the fiscal year that they were targeting. And that's not desired. So do they push it back to the holiday? Like, I don't know how that works.
I mean, they're now aiming early. So that would be next financial year, which is crazy. I don't know how that makes sense. But that kind of does show... If that was really the idea, that does show that... For Take-Two, that's like a big loss, because then if they really thought GTA was going to hit, like we did some calculations, or I in particular, like I thought there was no way it was going to be there, because they would probably get more money from it than they were looking at. But if GTA 6 was included in their forecast, then if that is removed, that's not great. That's not great.
Well, and like,
and if it's then, move to even further.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, like, they're getting very close with these delays to like significant new gaming hardware. Xbox is rumored to be dropping potentially a new console in 2026. Like,
would be like a plot twist if they like
can you imagine
launch game for the new Xbox?
Like that would be Phil Spencer's over there like trying to hack into their servers to delay, please.
Imagine that.
Like if Xbox launches a new console, PlayStation's launching theirs the year after. So Xbox has definitively the most powerful hardware.
Yeah, but I mean, even if GTA 6 launches into it, because I think we should at this point just say, okay, it's going to launch early 2026. I mean, this always happens. Red Dead was also fall 2016, and then it launched in 2017. I think GTA was delayed as well. It always happens, so it's not like a surprise. But yeah, early 2026, then it would still, at launch, be kind of an even playing field. PS5 Pro, we of course kind of talked about that as well, but Digital Foundry with the leaked specs was like, we don't even think it's going to like go to 60 with these specs. But yeah, Xbox, if they're really starting a new generation, could. But then, yeah, it would still be a year later that console would launch.
Well, and I'd be worried that would also lead to delays if they're like developing it and optimizing it for the Series X and S and PS5 right now.
They will be backwards compatible then, I think, for starters, and then launch it, because that's what they
launch
did for
like
the
a next
PS5.
Gen.
Yeah, then launch the next gen version later. But that's of course very, very future talk. Like we will see. But yeah, that's kind of crazy and not surprising, but I do. I mean, 2025, we talked about that Marvel game. It's also coming 2020. Like, there are so many titles, Monster Hunter, that are launching 2025. Ghost of Tsushima 2, probably. If GTA was really planned for early 2025, and it was included in Take-Two's financial call, then Borderlands 4 is 2025 instead, because that's not going to launch this year. So then we're really looking at a kind
of, and Sony's got a lot of stuff. Yeah, like Sony should.
Yeah, they have to.
Like The Last of Us, whatever, 3, if they do that, or a new Naughty Dog IP.
Yeah,
Santa Monica's working on stuff. The Days Gone team is working on something.
Yeah.
Blue Point is working on something. Kojima, he's working on stuff. Like
Death Stranding 2 is 2025 as well. Like, it's already crazy. So, I don't know. But it's mostly that. Even last year with that many releases and success like Baldur's Gate 3, the gaming industry still did not really grow that much. So that's why everyone is looking at GTA 6 to kind of get that new, also mainstream sort of injection. But yeah, they have to get it right, and they won't. They're not sweat. I mean, they're probably sweating it, but it won't, like in a few years from now, it won't change anything. Yeah. I mean, it's more important to get the game right, because there's a lot riding on it. And even if this is like a Cyberpunk situation, I think that would hurt the whole gaming industry, with a lot of like people that rarely play games, that are getting the console and are playing this game. And if it's like a technical disaster, then that's not good for everyone. Then a lot of people, I think, will stop gaming, because they've been burned before. And now they're like, okay, this is how gaming is these days. That sucks.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you cannot, it's almost impossible to put into words how big GTA is. Like, there are very few games that cross over the, like, media, the planes of media. Like, they cross from this plane to another, going from video game to TV to film. And GTA, Red Dead is one. Like, usually what I look at is if it pops up in TV shows or something that I watch, I know it's got a wide mass market appeal. So like if South Park does an episode where they, you know, have everybody playing Red Dead Redemption 2, okay, it's probably in the mainstream. Like it's crossed over. And very few games can do it, but Rockstar Games can. And I agree, they don't want to screw it up. If this was a flop, or if it has tons of problems or whatever, I mean,
yeah,
it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah. That would be for everyone, but I don't think it will. But that will mean that they will take all the time they need, and if they're already falling behind, that's not a good sign. That's really not a good sign.
Yeah,
but maybe the early 2025 was always too ambitious, because that's always what happens. Like, so far nothing new is happening. This always happens with Rockstar Games, and it's kind of surprising that they are surprised, because we are not.
Yeah,
but
It's like the joke. Oh, well. Yeah, you just take whatever date they said initially, add 2 years, add a year, whatever. Yeah. You're like, oh, that works.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's more that they, of course, said 2025 when we were all expecting 2024 because it was in 2023 when they said that. So it already felt like, whoa.
Yeah.
But yeah, we will follow it here. And
yeah. So in a number of years when it eventually comes out and we are old and gray, we will talk about it.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the lesson with all this is just that 2025 looks like it's going to be a year of madness, and there will be
Far Cry will be there as well, like multiple. Yeah.
God, man, it's gonna be so much. Jose, I don't know what to do with this super chat. I'm gonna be honest.
$20 to make that insult. Thanks, man.
I don't. So $20, very generous. So thank you. Appreciate you. I'm a be uncomfortably strange again and say how effing sexy you are, but Joe Raptor is not. JK, no, I'm JK.
JK, no, I'm JK.
So are you joking about joking? Is it so you're serious or are you joking? This is going to dominate my thoughts for the rest of the day.
Okay.
It's all I'm going to be thinking about.
Let's end on that high note.
Yeah. Man. Also, to catch up on the others, Mia, also thank you for the super chat. This is the question I think we've all been waiting the whole show to find out about. It's just what everybody has wanted to know. And there were technically hundreds of these questions. We just had to filter them out because there were so many. Jor, tell us about your gym and workout routine.
Have you been going already? Because that's what you kind of said, right? That people would could get.
Yeah, they could tease me if you accountable. Don't. Yes, I have been.
Nice.
We're not like I don't know what gains I could expect, but we're on our way. We're working on it.
Okay, yeah. That's nice. So for me, it's 4 times a week now. Monday the legs, and on Tuesday night either the chest or the back, and then I switch that on Wednesday, and then today Friday I did sort of a combination of things, and I'm going with 2 times with the trainer and 2 times with a friend who's a is that like an English word? Wait, yeah, fish, yeah, wait, I never said this word in English. Oh,
now I'm really curious.
Physiotherapy. Like he is a, yeah, is that a word?
Physiotherapy, is that what you said?
Yeah. So he is okay, not physiotherapy, but he is like the person who does that, so that helps. So that's cool.
Oh, that is nice. That's a good friend to have. Yeah, right there.
Yeah for sure.
Yeah, no, for me it's just a lot of the Stairmaster. I figure most cardio exercises, if I hate them with a passion, they're probably good for me. So I do Stairmaster, like 2 minutes high speed, 1 minute slow speed, just do Tabata surges with it. And then after that, go and lift. And I have a series of workout plans that I follow for that, just so I can't cheat or can't skip sets. I just have to do everything on the list before I get to go home, and I just do that, and it's been good. I think I mentioned on stream at one point there's an older gentleman. Like I usually go pretty late at night because I don't like a lot of people around there, but one of the reasons is because there's like this older guy who goes, and he's wearing the big hoodie and he puts it over so like you can barely see him, looks like Emperor Palpatine, and he just walks around. And like he's not super old, he's like maybe 50, but he walks around and he will pick somebody and he just mirrors them. So like if he picks me, he will follow me to every machine, to every bench, to every treadmill, like everything, and just do exactly what I do down to the count of reps. Just because he, I guess, doesn't want to make his own workout routine. So he just goes and leeches onto somebody else and copies them. And it's really uncomfortable because he'll just kind of like stand behind you swaying because he's probably amped up on pre-workout and wait for you to finish your set. Never says a word to you. He's got the big headphones on, and then he does his thing. It's really, really weird.
So if you do like a very crazy thing that he probably won't be able to do,
yeah,
then he's gonna still try.
Oh yeah, like at one point, I thought it was funny to like do, I forget what was it. I did something really stupid and weird. Like I got on the floor, like they have the stretching area, and you can kind of sprawl out. Normally you just do stretches there, but I just started like seeing, okay, I'm just gonna kind of bend my body in weird ways. Like I'm gonna put my hand on the wall and stretch weird, because I was just like, is he gonna copy like literally everything I do? And sure enough, he starts trying to stretch in weird ways, just like I'm doing, but pretending like it's he's just doing his own thing.
Yeah. Oh my god,
it's really uncomfortable. And I've been there before, where I've gotten there after him, and I see him following around like another high school kid who's on the wrestling team who's doing his workout, and he just copies his workout. And the guy's wearing his big headphones. If you try to talk to him or say something like "you good, bro," he just will like turn. Like he can't hear you, and it's just really uncomfortable. It's really weird. So I just go later at night when he's in bed.
It's pretty funny how someone asked, let's see, I think it was RSNOS, about what the most annoying word in English is. And then we have hair lip saying literally, and I get that. Like and you just casually in this story were like, he's literally, I was like, whoa.
Oh, sorry. He's widowowy.
Widowowy.
He's widowowy. Copy everything I do. Widowowy.
Yeah. I had one of those words. I sometimes use like Google. I mean, to be honest, like some of the Dragon's Dogma like names of like the cities and stuff, they're kind of annoying to properly pronounce. So having some issues with that. But apart from that, yeah, sometimes you run into those, but I try to just like not use those words, so it's easier.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do. But anyway, we're on the grind, Mia. We're working on it slowly, even with weirdos following us around the gym. We're trying. But as for the next episode, next week when we reconvene, we will be able to talk about season one of Suicide Squad.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's the 28th, right? Yeah.
Yep. So we'll be able to do that. And then who knows what else will happen.
By the way, we'll be going to China.
Really?
Yeah, for a holiday with my brother and his girlfriend.
I mean,
so I won't be able to make 1 week, I think. But
that'll be a good time. Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll figure that out. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. That's awesome.
Yes.
But with all this, I mean, everybody, thank you so much for watching. George, do you have any parting words of wisdom? Anything else you want to say?
Not really. I hope everyone has great gaming time with any of the games that they're choosing, or if you're still playing Final Fantasy, I totally get that as well. And let us know what you think of Rise of the Ronin. I'm particularly curious about the Rise of the Ronin. Like, am I the outlier here? I mean, the Metacritic is still pretty good, but
the Metacritic's higher than I would have expected with these performance issues.
But it is mostly from like websites where like Hobby Consolas. It's like a Spanish website or something.
Yeah.
PlayStation Universe 95.
How do you
so I'm like,
that
who
95?
Are these? Who are these people? So
yeah, I don't know how you give that a 95, but I don't know. Some people, I know some reviewers, they don't like consider technical issues when they're reviewing. They just review the game almost like in a vacuum, and they just don't really consider the problems, because they're like, hey, when it's fixed we won't be thinking about it, so let's just review it as a video game purely and ignore the rest. And as long as you're clear about that, okay, but I mean, I just don't know how you do that, like give it a 95. Like, you're rating it higher than, like, on the same scale as, like, Elden Ring and games like that. Like, I just don't understand how you put it in the same category. But
yeah, it's sometimes it's interesting. But, hey, more opinions, always great.
Yeah. Anyway, you all are wonderful. We appreciate you. You're all fantastic. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Enjoy whatever games you're playing. Stay safe, everybody. Much love. We will see you soon. Hugs and kisses. Bye-bye.